Hello everyone, myself Professor Reena Pujara, having an industry experience of 6 years and 6 years into teaching. In our earlier topics, we have discussed about the labor administration when it comes to India and their states. But then there are few matter of concerns, which are affecting not only in India, but the other countries as well. So to come together and, have talks on this, we had a common organization to deal with the labor issues faced in the world and different countries of the world, which was set up in 1919, and that is called as International Labor Organization. Let's have a detailed study about what is ILO and what are the functions of ILO. The International Labor Organization is a United Nations agency. So here, when we talk about United Nations is again organization wherein all the countries of the world come together and discuss the issues prevailing in their country. But when it comes to ILO, it is an agency designed under UN only to deal or only to the restricted areas of concerns to the labor and the workers of the countries. Dealing with the labor's issues, particularly international labor standards, social protection and work opportunities for all. So here when we talk about ILO, they are responsible to draw certain standards, or I will say minimum standards, to be followed by the member nations. Social protection measures which are sometimes voluntary in nature, sometimes compulsory in nature, to be followed by the member nations, and also to identify opportunities within the member nations for working opportunities within the member nations. The ILO has 187 member states, 186 of 193 UN member states. Now in UN, that is United Nations Organization, we have 193 member states, that is countries. And talking about ILO, among this 193 member countries, we have 187 members in ILO as well. Plus the Cook Islands are members of ILO, which are not there in UN, but they are the member in ILO. In 1969, the organization received the Nobel Peace Prize. Now, in 1969, ILO received the Nobel Peace Prize because somewhere ILO is responsible, to design certain standards, conventions and recommendations which are followed by their member nations, and by following such recommendations and conventions, the member nations are in a better position to bring industrial peace in their own countries. So somewhere ILO was a major contributor of bringing peace, or say bringing industrial peace, for which they have received this award. Improving peace among classes. Now in our earlier industrial relations theories, we have studied about a theory which talks about that industrial relation is a conflict of classes. So here the population is divided into, say, higher class and lower class. So when we bring this concept or theory in industry, we feel your employers on the higher class and employees who are working for the employers on lower class. So there will be always conflict, not because of, the industrial matters, but here there is a class conflict between employers and employees. Somewhere ILO, through its contribution, was able to, improving peace among these classes when it comes to industrial relation. Pursuing decent work. When it comes to decent work, that means the work done by ILO was really appreciable. When it was implemented in countries, it really showed good and positive results. Justice for workers. So when we talk about this lower class, that is workers and employees working in an organization, ILO up to an extent was able to justify and give justice to the workers, employees working in the industries and organizations. providing technical assistance to other developing nations. So here, by formulating, certain standards to be followed by member nations, equally ILO contributes assisting the developing countries who need assistance and guidance and technical assistance to implement the standards or conventions in their own country. The ILO registers complaints against entities that are violating international rules. However, it does not impose sanctions on governments. So here when we talk about violating the international rules, we will take an example for this. Now say in ILO international organization, the member nations have come together to resolve a common issue faced by the countries. Now we take an example of child labor again. So here now after so many discussions in the conference, ILO came on a conclusion that any member nation will not hire employees below age of 14. So this is somewhere a recommendation put forward by ILO. Now when this recommendation is accepted by majority of the member nation, it becomes a convention. So when any recommendation takes a form of convention, it becomes binding on all the nations to follow it. That means all the nations will now follow this rule of not hiring any employee worker below the age of 14. But if it is found that any nation or any country is not following this convention, then what will be, the further actions to be taken against this? But then here ILO refrain from, imposing such sanctions on the government. Unlike other United Nations specialized agency, the International Labour Organization has a tri-party governing structure. Now here when we talk about UN or the other agencies which come under UN, ILO also follows tri-party consultation. So your tri-party consultation consists of government representatives, employer representatives and employee representatives, and the ratio that is generally followed is 2:1:1. That means 2 government representatives, 1 from employer side and 1 from the employee side. The rationale behind the tri-party structure is the creation of free and open debate among government and social partners. So ultimately we want to bring industrial peace in any country. So it's all about the employer, employee and the government who are now going to impose or enact laws depending on the discussions happening in this conference. So basically the idea behind this tri-party consultation is that equal chance is being given to the social parties to put forward their points. It should be an open debate so that we come out with some healthy conclusions and suggestions. The ILO Secretariat, that is staff of ILO, represented staff of ILO, is referred to as the International Labour Office. Now, we have already spoken about, labour commissioners who are representing on the national level as well as state level. So, here we are talking about the international level. So, somewhere the ILO Secretariat will represent as a labour office when it comes to international level. The governing body under ILO are and they actually decides the agenda of the ILO, adopts the draft program and budget of the organization for submission to the conference, elects the director general, requests information from member states, that is member countries of ILO, concerning labor matters, appoints commission of inquiry and supervise the work of the International Labour Office. So when we talk about the governing body of ILO, they look into all these matters which are of concern. This governing body is composed of 28 government representatives. That means representatives of government from different countries, they are part, or they are representatives of different countries. They are 28 in numbers 14 workers representative. That means this also is following a ratio of 2:1:1. So the maximum they have given is 28:14:14. 28 government representatives, 14 workers and 14 employees. 10 of the government seats are held by member states that are nation of chief industrial importance as first considered by an impartial committee. Now here, when we are talking about discussions, there are some countries who take the leading position. Now who will be taking the leading position? There will be any 10 countries, you know, who are on the higher industrial pace comparing to other countries. And to appoint this 10 member countries who will designate on the top will be decided by impartial committee, who will decide that who should be those 10 countries who should represent this particular conference. The nations are Brazil, China, France, Germany, India, Italy, Japan, Russian Federation, the United Kingdom and the United States. The terms of office are 3 years. So now when it is decided that who will be these top 10 countries, who will be the top authorities in ILO, so this particular decision will continue for a maximum period of 3 years, and if required, the further selection may take place after 3 years. The ILO organizes the International Labour Conference in Geneva every year in June. So every year in June, all the member nations, they gather in Geneva with their topics of discussion, with their topics of concerns, which is well in advance provided to the ILO committee for designing their agenda. So now well in advance they have given the topics they want to discuss in the conference, where conventions and recommendations are crafted and adopted. Now what are conventions and what are recommendations? Now say for example, we have an issue to discuss in the conference. Now there are several recommendations made by the top 10 countries which are elected or selected by the impartial committee. So during the discussions, we have some recommendations for all the countries. So if these recommendations are implemented in the country, definitely there will be some effective and positive changes. But then these recommendations are not compulsorily binded on the countries. But what happens is, say for example, I have recommended that 14 there will be minimum 14 years of the age required to any employee to be employed in the organization. So this is my recommendation. Now say for example, out of 187 member countries, majority of them, or say 100 countries, agree to it, accepted that, okay, we accept to implement your recommendation in our country. So this is becoming a majority. Now when majority accepts it, it converts into a convention. Now this recommendation is no more suggestive in nature. It becomes a convention in the ILO list. So ILO convention, say for example number so and so, defines that the minimum age for working in any industry should be above 14. So this has now become a convention. Earlier it was a suggestion or a recommendation given to all nations. So what is happening over here is 100 countries have given acceptance to it, but then 87 are still not in its favor. But still, because majority have accepted it, now it becomes binding on the member nations. So recommendations are not binding, whether when we talk about conventions, they are binding. Also known as a Parliament of Labour, the conference also makes decision about the ILO's general policy, work program and budget. Each member state has 4 representatives at the conference. That means from every country there will be 4 representatives, following the same ratio, 2:1:1, 2 from government, 1 from employer's side and 1 from employee's side. So that is 2 government delegates, employee delegate and employer delegate. All of them have individual voting rights and all votes are equal regardless of the population of the delegate's member state. So here every person individually have a voting right. So it cannot be like there are two representatives from government. So if they vote, it will be considered one. No. Two officials can separately, independently give their voting on the matters of concern. The employer and worker delegates are normally chosen in agreement with the most representative. National Organization of Employers and Workers, usually the workers' delegates coordinate their voting as to the employer's delegates. Now, when we are talking about employer and worker delegates that are representing the country, so in the given agreements, now there are some agreements which need to be accepted by the employer and employee with the joint consultation. All delegates have the same rights and are not required to vote in blocks. That means if, say for example, four representatives from India. So it is not required that India, from India if they are voting, it should be one vote. It will be considered equally independently four votes. The ILO has adopted 190 conventions. So out of many recommendations that are being made in the international labor conferences, they have, you know, come up to 190 conventions which are binding on the member nations. If these conventions are ratified by enough governments. Now, what do you mean by ratified? Ratified means if the conventions are or the recommendations are accepted by the countries, they become in force. That means once you have accepted to that particular convention, you have to mandatorily implement this particular convention in your country. So the procedure is somewhat like that. Once the recommendation is done, then the votings are being taken. So when majority of them, they vote for the recommendation, it turns into convention. Now again in this convention, we ask for acceptance from the member nation. How many of would accept is? That is ratification to the convention. So once a country ratifies it, that means accepts it that yes, I will follow this convention in my country, the member nation is now binded to bring that convention in their country, bring that convention in their country into force within 1 year of the time. Now say for example, 1st to June 2016, the ratification takes place, I have accepted to implement the convention in my country, by say June 1st 2017 I have to implement this particular convention in my country. So 1 year's time is being given for implementation. However, ILO conventions are considered international labor standards. Now when we talk about these conventions, these are the minimum standards which are being considered before enactment of any labor law, regardless of ratification. Now here what we are talking about is, now when majority of the members have accepted to the convention, now say out of 187 members, say 100 are, you know, accepting this convention, 87 are not. But when majority of them have accepted it, the other nation also considers this as a minimum standard. They cannot give, below this minimum standard. The other 87 members also follow to the standards that are being made by the ILO. When a convention comes into force, it creates a legal obligation for ratifying nations to apply its provision. So as we have discussed that once the convention is into force and you have accepted it, it becomes binding on the country to follow it. Every year, the International Labour Conference Committee on the Application of Standards examines the number of alleged breaches of international labor standards. Now once we have understood what is ratification and acceptance, once the member nation has accepted the convention, 1 year time is also being given, you know, to bring that into force into that particular country. But then there is a proper check. every year by ILO that the member nation who have ratified to the convention, whether they were able to bring that convention into force or not. So if not, then there are applications made on it. Governments are required to submit reports detailing their compliance with the obligation of the convention which they have ratified. Now, every year whenever this conference is going to happen, last year I have accepted to some convention and have promised to implement that in my country. So the very next year when I represent my country, I have to show them a report or the list of laws, rules, regulation, policies that I have designed to implement the convention that was made last year in the conference. Conventions that have not been ratified by member states have the same legal force as do recommendations. So the same also applies to the member nations who have not ratified to the convention. In 1998, the 86th International Labour Conference adopted the Declaration on Fundamental Principles and Rights at Work. This declaration contains four fundamental policies. Now, when I talk about the fundamental policies, these are to be adopted by each and every country or each and every member nation. The right of workers to associate freely and bargain collectively. So, this is a fundamental right for whom? Yeah, when we talk about workers, when we talk about trade unions that are in India, so trade actually belongs to employee and employers both. But here we are only talking about the right of workers to associate freely and bargain collectively. The end of forced and compulsory labor, which is also, you know, a fundamental right when it comes to India. Every human being have right to of choice whether he wants to work or not in a particular field, and he cannot be or she cannot be forced to work. The end of child labor. This is very important, and still it is a very burning issue when it comes to abolition of child labor in a country. The end of unfair discrimination among workers. Unfair discrimination. Now see, there are some fair discriminations. When we talk about fair discriminations, they are performers and non-performers. Which industry would entertain, non-performers in his or her organization? So if I am paying more to a performer and I am paying less to a non-performer, there is a fair discrimination. But when we talk about unfair discrimination, that means all are on equal level. But then there are some offers being given to some workers and some workers are deprived of it. So that should not happen. The end of unfair discrimination among workers. The ILO asserts that its members have an obligation to work towards fully respecting these principles embodied in relevant ILO conventions. So here the ILO somewhere makes it compulsory for the member nations that whatever the conventions they have passed with the ILO should be followed genuinely in their countries. The ILO conventions which embody the fundamental principles have now been ratified by most member states. So the fundamental principles that we have understood till now are ratified, that means already accepted by majority of the member nations or countries. Now let us have some look on what are the programs and issues that are dealt in ILO. Labor statistics. The ILO is a major provider of labor statistics. So when we talk about statistics, we do have, organizations on national and state level who are responsible to provide statistics to the parliament in India. So similarly, this statistics, when it is discussed with ILO, so ILO is a bank of records. When it comes to labors, they are the one who have records and statistics of labor all over the world. Labor statistics are an important tool for its member states to monitor their progress towards improving labor standards. And this statistics is going to help any member state to recognize whether they have improved on the areas discussed in the previous conferences, how far they have been able to, you know, come up with a better and effective workforce after implementation of those conventions in the country. As part of their statistical work, ILO maintains several databases. These databases cover 11 major data series for over 200 countries. In addition, ILO publishes a number of compilations of labor statistics, such as the key indicator of labor market. When we talk about labor market, that is demand of the labor and supply of the labor, price of the labor, that is the minimum wage rate, fair wage, etc. It covers 20 main indicators on labor participation rates, employment, unemployment, educational attainment, labor cost and economic performance. So now when we talk about this indicator, it has 20 main indicators which reflect the total quality of the labor workforce prevailing in the country, or when we combine it to say particular region. Training and teaching units. The International Training Center of the ILO is based in Turin, Italy. Together with the University of Turin Faculty of Law, the ITC offers training for ILO officers and secretariat members, as well as offering educational programs. Now to make this, as we have discussed earlier also, it becomes very important that the administrative people should be trained and should be equipped with those skills which are necessary for a smooth and better implementation of policies design. So the similar is applicable over here. When we talk about ILO, the members, you know, the authorities who are actually responsible for smooth functioning of ILO should be well equipped with the skills required. So for this purpose, they have a training and teaching unit in association with various other agencies which are helping them to train and equip themselves to tackle and to analyze, to develop their analyzing skills so that they deal the issues very smartly. For example, ITILCO offers a Masters of Law, that is LLM, Program in Management of Development, which aims specialized professional in the field of cooperation and development. Child labor. The term child labor is often defined as work that deprives children of their childhood. So when we define what is child labor, so any work that doesn't allow a child to enjoy his or her childhood to the right of basic education, so that particular is called as a child labor. So when a child may be voluntarily going to the work, but then what is happening at this age, the child is not able to take decision what will be better for him in future. So here we take into consideration that particular age is required to take decision. So we here consider 14 years of age is required to enjoy the childhood, to take better education and equip self with those skills which will help them in future, which are required in future to have a better career. Potential and dignity, and is harmful to their physical and mental development as well. Now when we talk about physical and mental development, when they are not able to enjoy the childhood, somewhere it is affecting them mentally, and some work processes are not designed as such that can be performed by a child. Child labor refers to work that is mentally, physically, socially or morally dangerous and harmful to children and interferes with their schooling. So basic schooling is required by every child to equip themselves with those sets of skills that may help him to improve their performance in future. So we cannot deprive any child from taking basic schooling. Depriving them of the opportunity to attend school, obliging them to leave school prematurely, or requiring them to attempt to combine school attendance with excessively long and heavy work. That means initially they have described that any work which is depriving the child to take formal education, basic education, is child labor. So what techniques people use is they send their child to school, and after school times they are being, you know, taken to work. So this also is now considered that any child should not be exerted by giving more workload at the same time attending school and going to work is again considered as a child labor. ILO response to child labor. That means all the discussions that has happened in the conferences regarding the child labor. Parties to ILO's 1973 minimum age convention and the minimum ages they have designated. Now here, since we are talking about 1973, they are on to a conversation wherein they want to decide a common minimum age which is called as a child labor. So this convention is now implemented by most of the member nations, that is 14 years of age, and that is being represented such as purple 14 years, green 15 years and blue 16 years. The ILO's International Program on the Elimination of Child Labor, that is called as IPEC, was created in 1992. So now this particular program run by ILO for elimination of child labor for its member nation is called as IPEC. And IPEC has a major contribution, you know, in designing such programs which actually help the member nations to eradicate this or abolish this child labor from their country. So when we talk about IPEC, was created in 1992 with the overall goal of the progressive elimination of child labor, which was to be achieved through strengthening the capacity of countries to deal with the problem and promoting a worldwide movement to combat with child labor. So not only the member nations, but IPEC somewhere had a vision of eliminating child labor from other countries as well, who are not the member nations of the ILO. IPEC's work to eliminate child labor is an important facet of the ILO's decent work agenda. Child labor not only prevents children from acquiring the skills and education they need for a better future. Now, gaining the economic benefit at an early age will not help that child to build up a better career in future. So it is being considered that this 14 years of age, wherein the child can go to school, get basic education and skill, which will help him to get a better future. It also perpetuates poverty and affect national economies. Now when, you know, for short-term gains, we are sending these children to work and not sending them to schools. So for short-term, definitely they are earning money. We may have economic gains. But then we will have, poor quality of workforce in future, which will be more unskilled in nature through losses in competitiveness, productivity and potential income. Now these are some facts and figures that is a work of IPEC. IPEC have so far being able to eliminate child labor, and in some countries they have brought down the figures to a great extent. Global number of children in child labor has declined by one third since 2000. So prior to 2000, there were 246 million of children or child labor. But then when after contribution of IPEC, that has come down to 168 million children. More than half of them, that is 85 million, are in hazardous work, down from 171 million in 2000. Asia and the Pacific still has the largest number of almost 78 million, or say 9.3% of child population. But sub-Saharan African continues to be the region with the highest incidence of child labor. That is 59 million over 21%. So 21% of child labor which has come through is the African countries. There are 13 million that comes to 8.8% of children in child labor in Latin America, which is very low. And the Caribbean and the Middle East and North Africa, there are 9.2 million child labors, the percentage is 8.4%, which is again very low and which is a good sign. Agriculture remains by far the most important sector where child laborers can be found. That is, a majority of the portion where the child labor are being hired is agricultural sector, which is again unorganized. And so, you know, people take an advantage of this unorganized sector. And the data says that 98 million child laborers, that comes to 59% of overall 100 child laborers, are in the agricultural sector. But the problems are not negligible in service. So it's not that in organized sector we do not have child labor. In organized sector as well, we are having child labor around 54 million and industry 12 million, mostly in the informal economy. Child labor among girls fell by 40% after the IPEC since 2000. When compared to boys, it has fallen by 25%.